What's normally your type? Just curious.
Physical's never really been a thing for me. Did you just burp?
I did. Was that a good one?
Oh my God!
Was that a good one? It wasn't a fart. It could have been worse.
Oh God.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 478 for the week of September 25th, 2023. I am keen geologist David T. Cole, and I'm here with Pod Pillow Sarah D. Bunting.
I am nasty.
Golden Goblet Tara Ariano.
Tink.
And Trauma Bond baddie Brittany Luce.
Emotional withholding coming right up.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. We're going to get into our lead topic and our guest in just a second. But first, it's been a few weeks, so we wanted to give you an update on our Patreon campaign. Please do not fast forward, even if you think you know everything, because there is important information here. As we are recording this, we are a whisper away from hitting our next goal. Specifically, in this case, a whisper means $49. So when we hit that goal, we will unlock two new perks. Number one, the Forcening Pool, where each $5 of support you give us gets you a ticket to be the person who forces us to watch a TV episode you choose each month. It can be anything. Do your worst. Number two, we will unlock the live game time night on Zoom. You will come. You will have fun. It'll be great. The reason we're mentioning it now is that at the top of each month, our pledges dip down, people's credit cards expire, they reevaluate their budgets, etc. So the further we are above that $5,250 goal, the better it is for everyone, particularly you, because you get more stuff. And that more stuff already includes a second big bonus episode. Each Friday, we cover a second lead topic. We answer Ask EHG questions. We choose our Not Quite Winners and Losers of the Week. We give you your 15 seconds of fame on any topic you want to plug. And once a month, we get the most awesome thing Kim reads on TV this month. The latest of those is coming this week, by the way. So if you're a grandpa still supporting us at the grandfathered $2 level, you are missing out on a lot you could get if you just kick up that pledge by three little dollars a month. So if you're not in the Patreon, consider joining. For $5 a month, you get everything we just said, plus ad-free episodes of the main show, access to the Discord server, all the archives of the bonus episodes. And if you are in the Patreon as a grandpa, consider boosting that pledge to get absolutely every bit of content we're bringing you each week. And if you're in a position where you're just listening to the main show, that's great. We love you too. We hope you're telling everyone you know how much you love the show to help us get the word out, because we work hard on it. We think it's pretty good. Thank you for your patience. Thank you for listening. Thank you to everyone who's already supporting us. And now, you have heard our guest with us before, but not since she became the host of NPR's It's Been a Minute. Please welcome back Brittany Luce.
Woo, Brittany.
Welcome back.
Wow, that's what a warm welcome. Thank you so much for having me back. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, we're thrilled to have you because we're talking about season 5 of Love is Blind. Chaos King Chris Colan has assembled another bunch of singles to throw into his dastardly pods. They are specially designed, let's call them what they are, cells, where men and women can date from either side of an opaque panel. The only way to find out what your partner looks like is to agree sight unseen to get married, which a shocking number of couples do, although the number that actually go through with it is quite a bit lower. So far, four episodes have dropped on Netflix. We had access to more. Oops, I watched 7, but we will not reveal spoilers past those four episodes that are available to the public. Let us do the Chen check-in. Brittany, should our listeners watch season 5 of Love is Blind?
Absolutely, yes.
Sarah.
If you were going to watch it, yes. And if you weren't, no.
Dave.
Yeah!
This is not my kind of show, but, you know, have at it.
What?
Yeah, Sarah's right. I mean, listeners have heard me talk about it many times in the past. So they know I watch it. That's not necessarily an endorsement, but I'm into it. And perhaps you will be too if dating shows are your jam. So now we are in the spoiler zone. Let's get into it. We are going to go to our expert guest, Brittany, in just a second, but this was the first contact that my co-hosts have ever had with this particular social experiment, other in Dave's case than walking through a room when I have had it on. Neither of you is a dating show person, but do you at least maybe kind of get the appeal, let's say, versus something like The Bachelor? Sarah, you go first.
Yeah. Like, I'm not going to keep going with it, but I was saying before we all got on the mic that this is totally the kind of show that, like, if I were visiting Tara and Dave for a week, there was always at least one show that Tara sucks me into the, like, tractor beam of the show. It's never a good show, no. But there's always one, and this would be it. Mm-hmm. If I were in Austin, like, chilling on the couch under a dog, I would absolutely get sucked into this, like, permanently for real. Fortunately, I'm in my own time zone and can cast off the tentacles of this thing. But, like, I mean, I get it. I get that it was perfect for, like, pandemic times. Mm. I get that the portability out of pandemic times is also really good. Mm-hmm. My issue with it, aside from the choices that the production is making vis-a-vis whom to focus on, because some of these people are, like, active irritants, and I just had to, like, get up while it was playing, like, mm-hmm. walk around or get a coffee or something.
Yeah.
But I also feel like there are certain aspects of the, like, the logistics are a little bit opaque obscure to me. And maybe this is something that they just, like, went over at the top of season one, and now it's considered, like, received wisdom and they don't have to go over it again. But it's like, what is the timeline exactly?
Right.
What time of day is it? How many dates do they go on? What, like, where in relation to each other are they in the pod of pods? Like, I would like a little more process intel.
Sure, sure.
Yeah. But this is a, for what it is, this is a well-made show that's a good idea. So even if it's not your thing, like, it's not especially mine, but respect for the build.
Dave. Mm.
So that's where I'm at.
Yeah, kind of me too, except two things. One, it's strange because this is how me and Sarah originally met in pods. It was weird. That's weird.
They did not match.
No, no match. But this is not a show I enjoy. But when I hear people talk about it, and the immense amount of ROI they get out of a show like this, which is cheap to make, cheap to fart out, and it generates so much buzz and talk. Like, shows like this are always, like, the ones with the most volume on, like, the Discord or something like that. Like, people just go apeshit for this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sometimes I wish I could engage with a show like this, just because it seems like, you know, like the kid in the window wasn't invited to the birthday party, so he's just looking at it. Well, that sure looks fun. Kind of how I feel about shows like this. Like, sure. I don't like it. Mm-hmm. I never will. Mm-hmm. But yet part of me is like, what is it about my DNA that I can't enjoy a show like this? And I don't. But I'm just saying, I'm glad everybody else is having fun. And fuck that. Although I will just say this one thing, and maybe this can start your conversation.
Sure.
Fuck that one guy towards the end that was, like, super negging the whole thing, conversation about what a horrible person was. And, like,
oh, Uche.
Uche. More like Boo-che, but I guess we'll get into that.
Literally.
All right. That is a great place to start.
One
Brittany.
More thing.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Terrible snack selection. Okay, now you can go.
Yeah, it's not great.
They do look really
Where's
bad.
The bagel chips? What the and fuck?
It looks like when you go to the airport, like, okay, you're at the airport. You know somebody who has, like, the Admiralty Club pass, and you go there and you're all excited, except they had that little wicker basket.
Yes.
It's just full of those 10-gram snack bags. And you're like, well, there's fucking two pretzels in this bag.
I was going to say, yeah.
It's like that.
The Dorito bag with one Dorito in it, yeah.
The single peanut.
Yeah.
All right, well, Dave has already broken the seal on Uche, so Brittany, Uche, where do you stand? Controversial.
Oh my gosh, I am so anti-Uche. I know everybody's whole thing with Uche, like, the big to-do is the fact that he, like, went in on Aaliyah, who was a woman who I think they were each other's, like, number one connection. Mm-hmm. He went in on Aaliyah for sharing with him that she cheated on a past boyfriend, like, 2 years before. She felt bad about it, yada, yada, yada. She's trying to be upfront and honest. Mm-hmm. He went in on her for that. But he knew this whole time that there was a woman that he had dated in the pods, Lydia, who is a piece of work on her own. Lydia is a piece of work in and of herself.
Yes.
But Lydia also happened to be Aaliyah's best friend, a mess. But he knew that Lydia was in the pods and that he knew somebody in the pods. And he didn't tell Aaliyah that. He was not upfront with that. he waited until, you know, he was 100% sure that she was going to definitely hang out with him. And then he decided, you know, I'm going to tell you the truth. I feel so guilty. What I mean, like, I didn't like the fact that he lied about that. But even before that, I just didn't like the way he was talking to Aaliyah when she was like attempting to be honest and upfront with him about something.
Yeah.
That was just red flag city for me. And I was just, I think for me, that whole interaction, it went from him being like maybe perhaps disappointed or surprised that Aaliyah had done such a thing. Cause I'm not going to say, I'm not going to lie. I didn't see her as somebody who had that in her. So I was like, okay, Aaliyah, I didn't know you were that type of gal, but you know,
sure.
Happens to the best of us. But he like was basically like, well, did you ever tell this ex-boyfriend? You should have told her. It was like he started like talking down to her in this way that I thought was very uncool. Like just, for me, the way that he was acting toward her, the door was closed forever for me from that moment.
Mm-hmm.
It was like he was auditioning for some sort of like dating Judge Judy show. Yes, he was going to be the know-it-all judge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He was so judgmental and he acted like he was so smug. And he thought he was like this authority in her life, an authority on dating and cheating and all of this kind of stuff. And that just, I've been in therapy for 11 years. And that was just setting off all the alarms for me.
For sure. Yeah, he was, I think a problem with this show, I mean, it's in its construction, is that like it forces people to act like, I mean, you said it in your intro, Brittany, with like the trauma dumping, where it's like, this is how people think I'm going to reach intimacy is when I like sharing way too much, way too fast. And and I think he thought, or, it, you know, the way your mind gets wiped when you're in the pods is like, I have to have a big reaction to everything or I'm going to seem like I'm shallow. And he was reacting to that as if she had cheated on him. And this was how he was finding
literally
out.
Like that day. Like,
yes. Yes.
Yeah. Well, no, you raise a really good point about like even like the brain wipe that happens in the pods. Something that I noticed this time more so than any other season of the show that I've watched, and I've watched literally every episode, every single season, and I think every single reunion.
Yep.
I see you, Tara. But it really does create this feeling of like scarcity. It's like they get in the pods, and I mean, I'm sure it's completely psychologically damaging for them.
Absolutely.
They like really start to believe. I mean, Houston's a huge city. If you've ever been there, huge. They really start to believe these are the only available people left. Mm-hmm. And so like even a guy like Uche can completely go ham on you in a way that you might not even accept in the real world.
Yeah.
But like your brain, like you said, has been totally wiped into like pod brain. And you start thinking like, maybe this is the last chance I have at love. Maybe I can't ever leave the pod if I don't pick a husband.
Yeah.
It just makes you nuts.
Yes. Well, and this leads to the other phenomenon that we see on the show, which is when someone's number one says, you are not my number one. And then you watch them with their number two deciding in real time they're going to settle for them.
Mm-hmm.
Because we see it this season, and we see it with Johnny and Chris. We see it with Lydia and Milton. Both of whom are, by the way, rejected by Izzy. So in the first place, like, what is this guy's power?
Especially,
yes. Ugh. And I will say, in the later episodes, we get to see his apartment. And like, no offense to how people live that is different than me. But I was like, if only you knew, both of you ladies, you would not be that upset about this guy.
No, it's such a good point. They start to feel like they're like it's like this thing where like, oh, well, I guess if this one person, I'm not their number one, then I should just go with the next best person instead of thinking like, well, I guess I'll go back home and maybe get back on the apps. Or like, maybe I'll take up chess.
Is Pepsi okay?
Exactly.
Oh my God. Yes. The it's Pepsi okayification of love.
Oh my God. Perfect.
It's so real. And so, you know, Brittany, you said you've watched every season. I think I've watched every season except I bailed on season one. It just wasn't hitting for me. But
I agree. Season one was not my favorite. We're on the same page with that.
It really ramped up after that, I will say. But show participants have also been able to watch four seasons worth of how it has worked for other people, which I would not have necessarily thought because of that. that they would be so messy themselves. So I guess we have to shout out the casting team for finding people that, like, refuse to have learned from past seasons of the show, like, how to regulate themselves. You know what I mean?
No shame. But, no shame.
None. No shame. Go on. Speak on that.
I mean, they have none. It's really interesting. Like, okay, I'll say this. There's a certain strain of shamelessness. I would say maybe Irina, who was in Love is Blind
last season.
Mm-hmm. I think she was a very good example of, like, just your garden variety, I'm shameless across the board, reality television person.
Yes.
Not here to make friends, here to make waves and to see how I can turn that into social media fame.
Right.
Which I will say, two other previous Love is Blind castmates spoke to Fortune, I think. I think it was Deepthi and Natalie. They spoke to Fortune about the fact that they make way more as, to me, in my eyes, frankly, middling or almost lower tier professional influencers. I think Natalie was a management consultant. She was making 230K before, and she's like, oh, I quit my management consultant job.
Wow.
Because I'm making three times as much money.
Oh my God.
As an influencer. Wow. Right.
That's insane.
And like Deepthi does like online poker betting, like legal gambling ads. It's not like she's necessarily doing like a Dove campaign or something like that.
Sure.
These girls are bringing home real money.
Wow.
Anyway, I think that Irina was definitely going for that. And so she had like a shamelessness that wasn't directly related to whether or not she was going to find a partner. She was not concerned about that. She just wanted to like make her name known, which you could argue she did. Sure. But there's like people on the show though who like, it's weird. Like they kind of start to, I think like, I mean, again, I think there is a hypnotizing effect to being in the pods and they like obviously lose their good sense, but they also like don't care about someone being like, hey, like some of these people in this season, they would go to their number two thinking that their number one felt the same way. Mm-hmm. They go to their number two and be like, look, I like somebody else more.
Yeah.
Then the number one would be like, I dump you. Then they're going back to the number two.
Right.
Some of these people are begging or like somebody was disrespectful to them. And then they're like, I'll be the best. It was so like, it's just weird. Some of these,
this is some, I would like, say this prisoner's season, dilemma.
For real.
Like,
yes.
You know, your co-conspirator is down the hall and he's fucking telling us everything. Like,
exactly,
wow.
Exactly.
It's really like, I mean, not to bring true crime into it, but kind of.
But you're right. You're right.
Yeah.
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 I mean, especially like someone like Johnny, and to bring the jobs thing into it, I mean, knowing that some of them come in planning to probably quit once their profile has been raised on social media, that makes sense when you watch Johnny do what she did. And then you think like, who would ever trust her to be their lawyer after watching her on this show? Or Uche, he's a lawyer too. Like anyone who has a responsible job. Renee, we barely see her, but as soon as I saw she was a veterinarian, like, not my dog. anyone who has a real job other than like on Bachelor, this is why you see like project manager or like pharmaceutical sales. Like no one seems like they have any kind of a real responsible job. And that's probably
like,
for the best.
There's going to be people looking at them like, girl, what? We can't sit in this meeting until you explain to me what you were doing in the hot tub. Like, what's going on? Yes. What's happening?
Yes, exactly. So Brittany, as you well know, long before we had Love is Blind, this crazy man, Chris Colan, also brought us Married at First Sight, which I think is probably your sentimental fave and mine.
Yes.
Both are insane ways to try to meet your partner for life. Which do you think is more sensible, even if it's like just a tiny, tiny bit?
Married at First Sight.
Go on. Why?
I think Married at First Sight begins with the wedding. And because it begins with the wedding, you kind of already don't take the wedding that serious. You know what I mean? Like, you know that you can opt out at the end.
Sure.
Like, you can sort of, like, start with the wedding and then do all of the weird, hard stuff, like go on the honeymoon, try to figure out your, I don't know, bathroom cleaning schedule or whatever.
Sure.
And then you can decide after 8 weeks, like, I hate this person. I don't want to do this anymore. Mm-hmm. Whereas, that show ends with you making a decision to stay in the marriage or not. Whereas Love is Blind, it does technically end with you deciding to get married or not. But I feel like there's so much more pressure on a wedding than on decision day. And so that, like, for me, like, there is a choice element up front to a certain degree with Love is Blind. But with Married at First Sight, I do think there's less pressure with decision day than there is, like, pressure to like get married.
It sounds like on Married at First Sight, your personal agency goes from 0 to 100 very fast.
Yes.
And on right. Love is Blind, it's sort of a consistent level, I suppose, mm-hmm. judging from what I've seen. I mean, Married at First Sight is one step away from a show called Two Names in a Hat.
Yes. But Dave, the experts.
Well, my question was going to be, has it ever happened where the bride has gone to the head of the aisle and been like, no.
On Married at First Sight?
Off? Yeah.
No.
Or do they just not?
No, but the first season, like one of the first brides who became like, well, she and her husband have since divorced or separated at least, because she like became like their spokesperson. She mm-hmm. like hosted a lot of their like after shows and stuff like that. And
pre-shows. They had kids. They stayed together for a while.
It was like Jamie, I forget, and Doug?
Yes.
Yeah, Jamie Otis. She like cried because she thought her husband was too ugly mm-hmm. and she wasn't attracted to him. And she cried throughout the entire ceremony yes. and throughout the entire, this is terrible. I imagine that must have been so motivating. And she cried throughout the entire reception.
Yeah.
And he kept it cool. She basically the whole time she was like, I don't really like you that much. And he was like, look, maybe you will.
And
they did
and
last.
He was right.
They lasted. Yeah. I mean, yeah, he was right.
Yeah.
They lasted as often, as much as like, you know, someone's marriage could last in the real world. So,
yeah. My initial answer to this question was Love is Blind is less psycho. However, the way you're talking about it has changed my mind, because what our co-panelists don't know necessarily is that the way Love is Blind ends is you have this wedding and then you say at the altar, I do or I don't. And that is how the person finds out if it's going to work out for them. And you don't necessarily know when you say I do that the other person is going to say I don't. You would hope that these people would have enough respect for each other to be like, look, I know we have to do this whole wedding thing. They're going to make us. It's in the contract. But I'm going to say no just so you are prepared.
Right. Or like but, have some kind of hand signal.
Whatever.
Yes. Yeah.
But I don't necessarily trust any of the boobs who would go on this show to have that much consideration for their fake partners to be like, I don't want to blindside you, as it were. So I'm going to just let you know ahead of time. Here's what's going to happen. And so you get people going through the wedding and being like, I hired this mariachi band because it's like part of my culture. And I went through this whole thing. And then, by the way, I don't. Like, that's psycho. It's truly insane. and there's only so much you can blame on the production. And this is the thing with Uche, too, that he said, the producers told me not to disclose that I knew her until a particular point in the season. It's like, but what would they have done if you had? Like, this is still real. You're still right. a person, like, with agency. Yeah. Like, yeah. What are they going to do? Kick you out? Great. Like, what could be worse than what you did, honestly?
Well, and there's not disclosing, but then there's not disclosing and deciding that you're Judge Duty.
Exactly.
And you're just going to, like, you know, go all in on her, which, and going back to Dave's initial point, which is that this is like a big discussion generator. Like, this is causing some of the spicier exchanges that I have seen on our Discord, actually, because people feel ways about this. So I guess it's, you know, it does have that value. But I just remember watching this and being like, because I knew the twist, even though it hadn't happened yet. And it was sort of like, all right, there's being kind of like ethically and obeying the production's wishes in this regard. But you don't then also have to like cheat, splain it with that tone.
Yeah.
And then she just like leaves and he's like, are you still there? Like, well, no, she left. And I don't understand why she came back. And going back to my initial point, I don't understand the logistics of, like, if I were her, I would not go back in a room with Uche in it.
Yeah.
How does the production communicate to her that she has to go back in there? Like, I don't get that part, and I wish I did.
Well, I mean, presumably you can leave any time, but at a certain point, Johnny threatens to, and then she doesn't, because she decides Pepsi is okay. But... Sure. I don't know how long they keep you there either, and that's a whole other ethical question, which... one of the past season people keeps giving interviews about, where it's like, they mistreated us. They made us stay up for a whole day. They didn't feed us. They made us drink, blah, blah, blah. And I'm sure all of that is true. And I also think, you know, it's the 2020s. Like, if you don't know that signing up for a reality show is going to mean the abnegation of your personhood, I don't know what to tell you. Like, that's the job. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
You chose to do it. All right.
Unionize.
Exactly. Any final words?
Just like Bethany said. That's right. I've said all I can say on the topic. I just hope that Uche and I never meet. That's all I have to say. I hope we never meet.
I could sell tickets to that meeting, so overruled.
It is time to go around the dial. First up is with Tara. Tara.
Hello. I watched the first episode of American Horror Story. This season is American Horror Story : Delicate. We all know what the show is. Can you believe this is season 12? Oh my God, what is time? The show has covered creepy birth stories many times in the past. This time, creepy birth is the focus of the entire season. It is based on adapted material as well, a novel by Danielle Valentine called Delicate Condition. So the recently disgraced and then forgiven, apparently, Emma Roberts plays Anna Victoria Alcott, an actress who, with her art gallerist husband Dexter, Matt Jukri, Sarah, now is in the Murphyverse.
Hey, buddy.
They are embarking on their third round of IVF, and at the same time, Anna's getting huge Oscar buzz for her new elevated horror film, so she's in constant contact with her publicist, Siobhan, Kim Kardashian, who initially met Anna in a support group for people with infertility issues. And you know the clinic Anna and Dexter are using is bad news because Tabby Gevinson is the front desk receptionist and Anna's gynecologist is Dennis O'Hare and everyone is in blood red scrubs. So creepy, like somehow creepier than Dead Ringers, but somehow she still goes through with an egg harvest and an embryo implantation while trying not to notice the various creepy weirdos loitering around the edges of her life and the extremely dedicated troll who keeps talking shit about her online. So only the premiere has aired so far. It's probably early for me to say it seems like the dumb bitch version of Dead Ringers. And as someone who bailed on Dead Ringers partway through episode 2, I am the dumb bitch who is going to watch every second of this show, because I always do. Emma Roberts is kind of perfect as an eerily poised actress who can't quite convince you that she is relatable, even in a Watch What Happens Live appearance where she banters about Tom Sandoval with Andy Cohen. And Ryan Murphy's superpower continues to be casting people who are not really actors to play characters that are precisely designed to not stretch their abilities, by which I mean Kim Kardashian, at least in the first episode. She's kind of not bad, and I was shocked about it, too. So at this point, this show is either your thing or not, especially a creepy birth story is not going to be for everyone, leaving aside the whole, you know, parenting is a scam, and I've said that many times, and I stand by it. But if recent dark comedy-heavy seasons have put you off, I will say it seems like it has swung back to being actually scary, and I'm going to say particularly the opening credits, which are maybe the most disturbing ones yet, and watching them for the first time is always a treat because what they do with them is very artsy and cool. So American Horror Story Delicate, I don't know, maybe your thing. And I'm going to hold my plug because it is related to Brittany's topic. So I will leave it there.
Guess what? It's Brittany's topic.
Hey!
My topic is still up on Apple TV Plus, but I watched the first 4 episodes over the past weekend with my husband. He watched the first one while I was taking a nap. And then he enjoyed it. So he was like, wake up, let's watch this together. It stars Antonia Thomas, who many people remember from, of course, Misfits way back in the day, which is like a fantastic British show if you haven't seen it. But also, well, at least the first season I can speak for confidently. After that, I don't know what happened on Misfits, but
they settled down.
What's that?
They settled down.
but she also starred in the series that in the United States aired on Netflix. I think it was on E4 or Channel 4 in the UK called Lovesick, originally called Squirtle Recall. They decided to change the name, which was a good choice, which was a show that I really enjoyed and many people did enjoy as a romantic comedy. So I will say this. I'm not sure that I will eventually believe Antonia Thomas and Craig Roberts, who is an actor I really enjoy. He starred in Submarine and also, I believe, The Fundamentals of Caring, which are both great movies. And I think he starred in Red Oaks, too, which is an Amazon Prime show. But I haven't seen that one. But yeah, I like Craig Roberts a lot. I love Antonia Thomas. She's just so delightful. They co-star as two people who are like insomniac best friends who like have never met in person. And he seems to have some sort of issue with agoraphobia and like not wanting to leave the house that is yet to be fully explored. But they like have nice enough chemistry. I just don't know if I fully am going to believe them as a couple, which I think is what the show is pushing them toward. No, the show is blatantly obviously pushing them toward that. I don't know if I'm going to fully believe that, but I'm enjoying it for the time being. One of the things that I like to say is that for many people, like superheroes or comic book stories or horror or sci-fi fantasy are like their genres. Like if there's a show or a movie that like fits within that genre, they're just going in. That is actually how I also feel about romantic comedy. So pretty much if it's a romantic comedy, it almost doesn't matter to me if it's really even bad. So I'll say I personally have really, really, really enjoyed the show thus far, even though I don't know if I'm ever going to buy the main characters as a couple. But for now, it's like Sleepless in Seattle. They're not meeting up. So that hasn't really presented as an issue yet. But it's cute. It's pleasant. It gives you a nice little tickle in the heart. And it's on Apple TV Plus.
Well, I watched the whole season and I wrote about it at Cracked. So I will link that in the show notes because I felt differently about it. And I also love rom-coms. So I'll give an early plug since we're here and I'll talk about it more next week. But Starstruck season 3 is back this week. So I will recommend that more strongly and say more about it next week. And for your plugs.
Well, I guess you should listen to my show. It's called It's Been a Minute. It comes on NPR on the weekend. So Saturday, Sunday, most places, a couple places on Friday. But you can also, we also have podcast episodes that come out every Tuesday and Friday, wherever you get your podcasts. And that's the only thing really that I've got going on. Otherwise, you can follow me on Twitter, X, whatever, at BM Loose. But I know a lot of people aren't hanging out there anymore, but I'm still there and I'm still tweeting about Love is Blind. So you can find me there.
All right, Sarah, what have you been watching recently?
I am talking about Still, a Michael J. Fox movie. I am not also going to be talking about Up, although I considered making Dave do that. Still is Apple TV Plus's documentary on saltwater mollusks. Just kidding. It's obviously about Michael J. Fox. It is, I think, written by Fox based on his memoir. It is directed by Waiting for Superman and Joe Biden convention video director Davis Guggenheim. And it's a really good, watchable, confident, smart 94 minutes recommended to me by T-Bone. And now I am passing the rec along to you listeners. Yes, it is a film, but it is on a streaming service and it is about a guy with two pretty significant sitcoms on his CV. So let's just go with it. Anyway, it isn't like a Hall of Fame property necessarily, but I was impressed by how basically every narrative or editing decision was correct, starting with letting Fox take the lead on the scripting. He is still so clever and charismatic, his own self, not to mention willing to talk about his Parkinson's symptoms and be filmed sort of experiencing them. The ways that he describes, for instance, the sensation of one of his pills kicking in is so accessible and direct. But Guggenheim and editor Michael Hart don't underline these moments. They just keep things moving. Like there's a shot of the entire Fox pollen clan on the beach at the end. That's the same kind of thing. It's a sweet moment, but the film doesn't let it sit out too long and spoil. It just like cuts to the next bit. Hart is actually really the co-star of this documentary here, the editing together of pertinent footage from Family Ties and Back to the Future in that doing both at once sequence where he's totally overworked is really nicely done. It's just a solid sit. Strong A-. It's called Still. It's on Apple TV Plus. For my plug, we have a new season of Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs. It's all comeback songs. It's called Do Call It a Comeback. We have actually been here for years. We have a new theme song, Spliced Up, LL Cool Andrew Byrne. It's really a good time. We're talking about the definitive comeback pop song of all time. You can find that wherever you get podcasts, and you can vote on prospective best comeback song at our Patreon. That's patreon.com/mastass.
All right, here's what's happening on Extra, Extra Hot Great, coming to you this Friday. It's Special Forces, World's Toughest Test, Season 2. Does Brian Austin Green or Tara Reid die? Yes, one of them does, but you can only find out exclusively on this Friday's Extra Extra Hot Great. Get that by being a club member. Visit extrahotgreat.com/club for details. And then right here next week on EHG Prime, it is The Boys spinoff, Gen V, and we welcome back Nick Reinwell Jones for that. Don't miss it or I'll get you. It is time for the Extra Hot Great Canon listener submission this week. Take it away, Teresa.
Hi, Extra Hot Great. This is Teresa, and I hope you feel like a good cry because I'm submitting Season 1, Episode 3 of Normal People for the canon. When Normal People came out in the spring of 2020, when we were all isolated at home, a lot of the buzz I heard about the show involved the escapism of a story about two attractive Irish teenagers secretly hooking up at a time when we weren't allowed to touch other people. And yeah, it's pretty hot. But it's also a heartbreaking love story between two complicated young people. So while the montage of everywhere and every way Connell and Marianne have sex in the second episode is very good, I want to focus on the third episode where everything falls apart. We open on Marianne getting dressed up, surprising both her verbally abusive brother and her emotionally distant mother. Clip one.
What are you doing?
Helen. I'm going out. It's a fundraiser for the Debs. I'm on the committee.
No one's going to ask you to the Debs. What's the point?
Maybe I'll go on my own.
And what are you doing at this fundraiser?
Selling raffle tickets.
You're going to find some way to humiliate me. I know people there.
Well, you certainly have gone all out, Marianne.
At the club, Marianne's peers are surprised but compliment her appearance. Connell says nothing to her, but watches her dance and covertly brushes his hand against hers. The evening comes to an abrupt end when Marianne is sexually assaulted by a friend of her brother and leaves in embarrassment. Connell's ex, Rachel, tries to brush off the interaction, but Connell defends Marianne and offers her a ride home. On the way, Connell invites her to spend the night at his house. Clip two.
Is Doreen not going to be there?
She'll probably be in bed.
What if she's still up?
She's pretty easy going with that stuff, like I don't really care.
She seems like a really good parent.
Yeah. I think so.
She must be proud of you. You've turned out so well as a human being.
How did I turn out well?
You're a nice person. Do you know how rare that is?
There are two big things happening in this scene. Number one, we see how much Marianne envies the relationship that Connell has with his mother, a single parent who works as a house cleaner for Marianne's mother, compared to her own family. And number two, we're set up for Connell's big fall from grace. When they're in bed later, Marianne tells Connell that her late father physically abused her mother. Clip three.
You'd never hit a woman, would you?
God, no, I would just that.
I don't know. My dad used to hit my mum.
Jesus, I'm sorry. Did he ever hit you?
No.
Look, I would never hurt you, okay? You make me really happy. I love you. I do. I'm not just saying that, Marianne, I really do.
We understand a little more why Marianne would accept the arrangement with Connell. Her primary example for romantic love was toxic and has definitely screwed up her ideas about healthy relationships. She's so starved for affection that she'll settle for being Connell's secret, even if he tells her he loves her in private. She continues to make destructive choices in romantic partners throughout the series. When Lorraine sees Marianne leave in the morning, she says she already knew what was going on. Connell asks her not to tell anyone, which Lorraine disapproves of. At school, Connell's friends joke about his leaving the club with Marianne and how cozy they looked. He has a mild panic attack in the bathroom afterwards, foreshadowing Connell's mental health issues that arise later in the season. Afterward, he asks Rachel to Debs, the Irish equivalent of prom. When Connell tells Marianne, she cuts off contact with him. And when Lorraine finds out, she's pissed. Clip four.
Who's Marianne going to the Debs with? Dunno.
So maybe no one will ask her and she just won't go?
Yeah. Maybe, I dunno.
And you don't think maybe you should have asked her? Seeing as how you fuck her every day after school?
Vile language to be using.
Well, feel free to explain in your own words, Connell. What exactly is the arrangement? Marianne comes over to our house, you have sex with her, and then she's not allowed to tell anyone, is that it?
Does that mean allowed?
Do you talk to her in school? In front of your friends, are you nice to her? Do you talk to her? Would you say hello to her even?
I doubt she cares if I say hello to her.
You're fucking her!
Can you stop saying that?
You're fucking her and you wouldn't even say hello to her in public.
It's not like that you're twisting it now.
What are you afraid of? What people would think of you if they find out you liked her? I tell you what I think of you. I think you're a disgrace. And I'm ashamed of you.
Where are you going?
I'll get the bus home.
What are you talking about? Will you act normal, will you?
If I stay in the car, I'll only say things I regret.
Matt!
Actress Sarah Green has a pretty small role in this show as Connell's mother, but the scenes she does have in this episode are beautiful. There's so much at play in this moment. I've always wondered if Connell's actions remind Lorraine of his dad, who has never been in the picture, and how he may have treated Lorraine when she got pregnant as a teenager. Or is she simply disgusted that her son would treat another person so callously? And Connell's retort asking her to act normal comes up again and again throughout the series. It is called Normal People. All quiet on assuming Connell wants his normalcy. And as an insecure teenager, being with weird outspoken Marianne in his small sheltered town isn't normal. We get a few more great scenes with Lorraine. She comforts Marianne, telling her that Connell doesn't deserve her. And when Connell asks Lorraine after Marianne, Lorraine doesn't pull any punches. Clip 5.
Marianne's a very vulnerable person. And you did something really unkind. And you hurt her.
You could just try being on my side.
I don't want to be on your side on this one. I don't think it's a bad thing that you are feeling bad about this.
Fine.
That balance of affection and tough love is one of the hardest parts of parenting. Knowing your kid is wrong and wanting them to figure it out for themselves. Lorraine never blames herself for Connell's actions or defends him. Even her criticism is filled with more caring than Marianne's ever received from her mother. At Deb's, Connell learns that his friends knew about him and Marianne all along. He calls Marianne from the street, leaving her a message. Clip 6.
Hey, it's me again. I know it's late to be calling and all that, and I know you probably don't want to talk to me or anything, but I was just calling to say that I miss you. See, I can't really talk to anybody the way that I talk to you or anything like that. And, I don't really know what to say other than the fact that I miss you, and I really love you, Marianne, and I'm sorry.
After Connell breaks down, we ride out on the sentimental ballad, Yazoo's Only You, which always makes me cry. The end of episode 3 closes the teenage chapter of Normal People, setting up the reversal in dynamics that Connell and Marianne encounter in college. The pace of this show, like the novel, is never rushed. The characters mature slowly but deliberately, and each episode is only 30 minutes, so it never feels overstuffed. It's a small story with thoughtful performances that elicits big emotions. And I think it should be in the canon. Thanks.
Thank you, Teresa. Brittany, you chose this. Please start off our discussion. What do you think of the episode and Teresa's presentation?
First of all, love Teresa's presentation. That was so great. You really picked the most resonant and some of the most beautiful and affecting moments from the episode. So thank you so much for that. I really loved this series. I loved Normal People. I actually started it. And then something told me to pause it. I ended up talking to a friend of mine who had read the book first and loved the series. And he was like, you gotta read the book first. So I read the book, absolutely fell in love with it. And then watch the series. And it just was like, I mean, it's incredible on its own, but it's a beautiful adaptation. It's really incredible. Like, so much of what happens between the two main characters, Connell and Marianne, is like emotional shifts. You know, like Teresa was saying, like they grow in these very small lurches and very deliberately. And like, it can be hard to communicate emotion and like all of these little sort of like, I don't know, all of the like the big emotional, big anxiety, big mental health aspects of it, but also like the quotidian teenage drama aspect of it all. And to make all that happen, like through looks, glances, framing, editing. But I thought that the series does it really well. And episode three is, I think, where it's like where the teenage chapter ends. But to me, it's where like the real emotional stakes of the entire series are established, like really helps you to see very clearly what Marianne and Connell are up against as individuals and how that's going to keep them from fully connecting as well as they could as people. So as soon as I saw Normal People, I was like, hell yes, I am in. And it was such a treat to revisit this episode.
Thank you so much. I'll go next. I appreciate that this is just a story about people having a relationship. Like, so often, especially on TV, it feels like it's a love story, but they're also spies, or it's a love story and oh no, someone got murdered, and it's like,
we're in hell.
Exactly.
Literally.
Love story is enough. Like, this is, it's there, and this episode is such great proof of that. It's like, even though they're teenagers, like you're so used to, again, in television, you know, the teen drama corniness of like, you know, a Dawson's Creek or some such, where it's like everything is cranked up to like, you know, 17 on a scale of 1 to 10. And this, like, just the simple shot of like Marianne rolled away from the camera, just lying on bed crying. It's like, it just feels so real and so visceral. And it is, like you said, the editing, the choices, the shots, it's so effective in like just drawing you into this story that, you know, I understand is part of a longer piece, obviously, but each time we revisit the series, each episode, just, it really feels like a short story that is like, it contains everything it needed. Like, even if there wasn't more of a show around this, you would still feel like both of these characters were completely three-dimensional, and you understand like where they are at this point in their lives and what's in the past and what's ahead of them in this episode and the last one we talked about for the canon. The sort of, you know, the stumbling block for me is the idea of like, Marianne is this huge nerd. It's like, oh yeah, she's a real unfuckable loser. Daisy Edgar Jones. Like, I understand. Mm-hmm. This is just how pop culture is. No one who is like TV ugly is ugly for real. But that part was, you know, fine. I guess I can suspend my disbelief. But I really appreciate that Teresa also gave so much attention to Lorraine, clearly the queen of this episode. and this actress is also so great in the Bad Sisters as well on Apple TV Plus. If you haven't seen that too, she's great there as well. So this was, for all of these reasons, plus the reminder that I never will have to write another exam in a gym for as long as I live, I appreciated getting to dip into the show again for this episode. And this was a really great choice. Sarah.
Yes, as well. Marianne sweaters. All flawless. 5 stars, true, no true. Notes. At first, I was not sure what I was going to do about this, because one of my criteria, which is not necessarily probative, but one of my criteria for canon inclusion is, did I want to keep watching? And in this case, I really didn't, because I spent the whole like 32 minutes or whatever just bracing for something else sad to happen, or something just like relatably 17 years old to happen. And it was like, I don't know if I want more of that. But with all of that said, first of all, Lorraine can carry this into the canon on her back. My notes literally say, fuck him up, Lorraine, and then dot, 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 fuck yeah, Lorraine. So, you know, I got what I needed in that regard.
But going back to what Tara was saying about it being a short story that feels sort of self-contained, it does have that like standalone short story filmic, not bottle episode, but like it doesn't need you to continue because everything that it's trying to do, it did in this moment, in this series of moments. It was only half an hour, which is really unusual and impressive. And the way that the shots are set up and the way that they can communicate so much about what has gone before and what is going to come after, just based on where they choose to put the camera or like what angle the back of someone's very sad neck is shown at, like all of that is done exactly right and is giving you a lot of information that you may not even be aware that you have until you get to the end and you're like, I just need a minute to lay down. But I think one of the more impressive things to me also about this 30 odd minutes is that it took the emotions and what these young people, these teenagers are feeling, and sort of took it seriously while also like it had empathy for them, but also understanding that like at 17, everything seems like the end of the fucking world.
Yeah.
And whether it is or not, you can't, if you're 17, you don't see that. It's like everything's an oncoming train.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I thought that was well done. And that's a hard balance to strike without being either like campy or condescending. It's harder than it looks. And this was really well done. The acting is good. Yes, Marianne, the unfuckable Ago, like, come on. Like, really? Do you want to maybe think about recasting that? But there's something to be said for this episode that, like, even Rachel, who was like, you know, in the beginning of the episode, you're like, ugh, twat. But then you kind of feel for her. Like she appears in her dress with her ringlets and you're like, oh, no, nobody's
a person
happy.
Too. God damn it.
Yeah. I know. And her dad. And it's just like, oh boy. Like, you know, we all recognize this moment. So I have to say that this was really like, I think I'm going to dig into this, but excellent tip from Brittany on reading the book first. I think I will start there and then watch this.
Before we pass this on today, I just wanted to add regarding what you said at the end, Sarah, about like when you're a teenager, everything feels like the end of the world. That is true. And I think the show handles that well. But what Lorraine's reaction to the situation also tells you is like, this is a small deal, but it's also a big deal. And she's not letting him off the hook. Like, you know, her unconditional love for him does not include unconditional approval of all the shitty things that he's doing. And she's like, it's important for you to feel bad. Like, and it is for his development. But
the way that she puts that too, that it's like, I don't think it's a bad thing that you feel bad about this. Like, that's exactly the right way to put it. Like, sometimes, you know, you need to sit with this and realize that you were a turd to this girl that you love. So speaking of turds, Dave, just kidding.
Up until just when Brittany started talking about it, I could have put real money down that the asshole character was named Connor, and I was just hearing it with an Irish accent, not Connell, which apparently it is.
Yeah.
So that's thing number one. Uh-huh. Thing number two is, I guess I just really hate him, and I generally don't get why all the characters in this show aren't always kicking him in the balls. Like, seriously, like, he acts so terrible that, like, don't really believe, even though I know she's sort of fucked up, that she would go for him. Mm-hmm. That said, that relationship creates, you know, the interactions he has with his mother. It balances things out for me on the canon ledger. Number three, this show could have been called Dreary Girls. And we're short on time, so I can leave it there. Let's put this to the official vote. Brittany, what say you?
Yes.
Tara Ariano.
Me as well.
Sarah DeBunting.
I.
Sure. All right, that means Normal People, Series 1, Episode 3. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
I Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
We are crunched on time, so quickly, winner and loser of the week. Tara has the winner.
After 146 days on strike, our winner is the WGA, which has reached a tentative agreement, which might be the final agreement by the time you hear this, with the AMPTP strike over. Next up, SAG. Let's get it done. Hooray.
And loser?
Oprah, who deleted the YouTube clip of that horribly cringy 1986 interview Cindy Crawford called out in The Supermodels. And she should have left it up and sat with the shame. Mm. It's just my opinion.
Speaking about just your opinion, no time, it is game time.
You're sitting with the shade.
I thought who was going to be sitting with the shade.
I've already forgotten everything you said up until this. Very small random access memory threshold today. All right, this is game time. We are playing the ninth game of the season. Our scores are Tara with 4, Sarah with 3, Value Guess with 1. Today, we're playing the second half of last week's game.
Hey.
So that was also Connect from Mark. So this is also Connect. This is also, like last week, based on the British quiz show Only Connect. This game will focus on connections and lateral thinking. You'll be given a series of 4 clues just for yourself. You must answer what these 4 things have in common. Sooner you answer, the more points you get. 5 for the first, then 3, then 2, then 1. You can have a quick guess after each hint. Shows may appear in clues more than once, but will not appear in answers more than once. All right, no stew meals today. Let's throw it a picky to get this show on the road.
We will start with Sarah.
All right, we'll go Sarah, Tara, Brittany. Up to 21 questions if we can fit them in.
Okay.
No gross worth equalizer challenge zones. Are we ready to play also Connect?
Yes.
Yes.
All right, Sarah D. Bunting, your first clue is Maximum Bob. Maximum Bob.
Shows within shows.
Fresh off the boat.
I don't know. Next hint.
Burn Notice.
Shows with B in the title.
And finally, Golden Girls. Maximum Bob, Fresh Off the Boat, Burn Notice, Golden Girls.
Younger Wit Productions?
Incorrect. Anybody want to take a stab at this for glory?
Set in Florida?
Set in Florida, yes.
Oh!
All right, Tara.
Yes.
Gerald McRaney.
Oh, that's my whole clue?
Yeah.
Sitcom Troops.
I don't know why I said it like that.
Okay.
It's like a trailing end there.
Okay.
Patrick Warburton.
Next.
Scott Bakula.
Next.
Hal Holbrook.
Love interest on Designing Women.
Dated a Designing Woman, yes.
Nice. Pull.
That's good.
I was
That's
like,
good.
Played D.B. Cooper?
Woo.
All right, Brittany, here is your first clip. Okay. Susan Walters.
Oh, my God, next.
Jane Leaves.
Okay, next.
Courtney Cox. One more for you. You need it?
Yeah, I need another one.
Janine Garofalo. Susan Walters, Jane Leaves, Courtney Cox, Janine Garofalo. What TV thing do they have in common?
TV thing do they have in common?
Yeah.
Damn. I don't know. The only thing I can think of is like, are they all brunette?
They are. Know.
3 people have not been in my kitchen. Anybody know?
They are Jerry love interests.
They are Seinfeld love interests.
Ah. Right. Of course.
All right. Circling back to Sarah. Raj, Dwayne, and Rerun have comic adventures in 1970s Los Angeles.
The what's happening synopses.
Chris. CRIS, if you care to know.
Oh.
Next.
Darva Conger.
Oh, things related to, things with like interrogative, things of the title.
Okay, I got to tell you, you're close. Last clue. Undecided, probably Mona.
Undecided, probably Mona? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. So it's show titles with elements from shows with questions in the title. Who's the boss? Come on.
You're close.
Who?
Give me one more crack at it.
What
are the shows? Raj, Dwayne, and Rerun.
Okay, so that's What's Happening.
Chris.
Who's the boss?
Yeah.
Chris, who everybody hates.
Darva Conger.
Yeah.
Darva Conger, Who Wants to Marry a Millionaire. Excuse me. Who Wants to Marry a Millionaire. And then Chris was...
somebody.
Yeah.
All yeah, right.
You're very close. The last one is undecided.
Give it to me or don't. We're in our time constraint.
Answers to the questions posed by TV titles. What's Happening? That was What's Happening. Who Done
okay.
It? Chris.
Oh, yeah.
Who
okay,
Wants to Marry
okay,
a Multimillionaire?
Okay. All right.
Who's the Boss? Probably Mona. Close, yeah. But no
all right,
cigar.
Fair.
Car.
All right.
You're in the picture.
Say that again.
You're in the picture.
Okay, next.
The Herman Cain Show. R.I.P. We miss him.
Newsmax titles? I don't know.
Osborne's Reloaded.
Oh my god. Whatever this category is, it's cursed. Leave me the last one.
Emily's Reasons Why Not.
Shows that were canceled after one episode.
You are correct. 1 point. Back to Brittany.
Yeesh.
I, Zombie.
I've heard of that, but next.
Dark Angel.
Are these like, what? Vampires? No, they're like some sort of... they're all horror shows that were on the CW.
Or Frasier. And he, I don't know, he's Frasier.
What?
Frasier.
What is it?
Frasier.
Oh, Frasier.
Yeah. Weaving in a 30 Rock joke into a show title. That you don't know the joke.
Wait, so hold on. We have iZombie.
Dark Angel.
Dark Angel. And Dark Angel, like starring like Jessica Alba.
Yeah. I think, believe so.
Yes.
Yeah, one
Frasier?
Yeah.
Are they Frasier. All set in Seattle?
I'm going to give you that. Series What's taking place one? In Washington State.
Washington State.
Yes.
Ah. What was the last one?
Grey's Anatomy.
Oh, yeah. I probably wouldn't have gotten that one. Oh, no. Seattle Grey's. Maybe I would have gotten it, but I probably still would have said
I don't think they all take place in Seattle proper, but maybe they do. Maybe they don't. I'm feeling generous after wasting 5 minutes on Sarah's. Okay. Sarah D.
You made choices.
Yeah, that's right. He did. I'm on
Keep
your side.
Making good ones.
Robert Terwilliger.
Next.
Lionel Hutz.
TV Lawyers.
Stu Discotheque.
I love that that's his last name.
Yeah.
Simpsons characters in Simpsons advertising.
And finally, Troy McClure. This was probably one for Tara, not for you, but, you know, sometimes that's the way the cookie crumbles. What do they all have in common? They are all from The Simpsons. You're right there. That's
okay. They're all voiced by Mr. Phil Hartman?
Incorrect. Tara, do you know?
I mean, they're all Simpsons characters, but beyond that, I don't know.
Yeah, they're all Selma's husbands at some point.
Oh, of course.
Oh, shit. Right.
All right. Tara.
Yes.
Merlin Peen.
TV Pretend Holidays.
Yep. Merlin Peen is the first of that whole set. That's a 5-point answer. Brittany. Cole Sprouse.
Famous. Wait, hold on. More famous twin.
Vince,
I love that answer.
Good.
Vince Edwards. My apologies.
I don't know.
Adam Scott.
Like the actor? Just like in general?
Yeah.
Come on. Okay.
Cole Sprouse, Vince Edwards, Adam Scott. One more.
So I only know Cole Sprouse from two TV shows. I know from Sweet Life of Zack and Cody, which I was too old for. And also the other one that just ended, which I was a little too old for, but I still watched the first season. I forgot what it was called. Riverdale. And I don't know who Vince Edwards is. Whenever I hear Vince Edwards, I just think of like Vince Gill. That's not helping me. And then the third one you said was Adam Scott.
Yeah. You know him.
Oh, Yeah, and I know him
personally.
But I can't think of like.
I got one more for you.
Okay, one more.
Scott Speedman.
Did they all guest star in Boy Meets World or something?
Incorrect. Anybody know? All play characters named Ben.
When did Cole Sprouse play someone named Ben? Oh
my God. Cole Sprouse from Friends.
He was Ben
Vince
on Friends.
Edwards, Ben Casey, Parks and Rec, and Felicity.
That.
Diabolical.
Sarah.
Yeah.
Stuart Hughes.
Next.
Kemi Talbot. K-E-M-I. Kemi Talbot.
Next.
Laura Montez.
Next.
Selena Meyer.
Vice presidents.
Presidents on Veep. They were all presidents on Veep. Tara.
Yes.
William Macy, Shameless.
Next.
Na Visitor, Star Trek, Deep Space Nine.
Next.
Lady Ga, American Horror Story Hotel.
H. Naga. Oh, God. Give me the last one.
J. Simmons, Oz. This is so dumb. You're going to hate the answer. If you get it, we're just going to end the game. We're all going to go home.
Missing actors with missing initials, middle initials.
You're very close. Actors with missing elements found on the periodic table.
God damn it. What? That's so stupid.
With H. Macy.
Okay, I got to give you that.
I really hate this.
N-A-G-A-K.
All right, good.
Back to Brittany. Okay. University of New York.
Isn't that the fake? That's a fake college from Felicity. So is it fake universities?
Yep, fake colleges. Hey! 5 points.
Nice. Go.
Sarity Bunting Pyramid. Pyramid.
Things that are shows with money amounts in the title.
Dollar. Kosho. K-O-S-H-O.
K-O-S-H-O. Jono. Next.
Domjot.
Next.
True American. Pyramid, Kosho, Domjot, True American are all what?
Torturing me with my ability to get a point?
True American, you might be able to pull because it did come up on this very
podcast.
Yeah,
it wasn't a canon episode.
Relatively recently.
Sorry.
Anybody know this one?
It's like made up fake games.
Fictional games, yes. Yeah. Fictional games.
Okay.
All right. Tara.
Yeah.
This will take us into our score break and we'll evaluate our time after this.
Okay.
Young and the Restless/Baywatch.
Next.
Search for Tomorrow / 30 Rock.
The soap operas that and the shows that those soap opera stars went on to star in?
That is close enough.
Okay.
Star of the second show started on the first show. They all are soap operas as well. We had As the World Turns, Game Change. That was Julianne Moore. Oh, that's not a soap opera. But I'm going to give it to you because in the interest of time, let's just move on. I'm going to take 1 point off. How about that? You whipped out on the next one. All right. Let's get the scores.
Nope.
Do you want Brittany?
There's one more, isn't there?
Yep.
You betcha.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that was also a test. All right, here we go. Brittany, this will be our last question of the game. I'm going to choose one from what's left over. All right, let's do this one. Here we go. Ready?
Okay.
A man is killed by his wife after she hits him on the head with a frying pan while he complains about work.
Next.
A famous porn star is accidentally electrocuted in her bathtub when her cat knocks her hair curlers into it.
That sounds good. I never seen that one. Next.
A woman is crushed to death by falling blue ice from an airplane.
Next.
A deeply religious woman mistakes floating inflated sex dolls for the rapture and, while distracted, is fatally struck by a car.
I believe that was Beth Grant of My Name is Earl, if I recall correctly.
Additional information, Tara.
I maybe.
Oh, yeah.
To help you on your way.
I don't know. What are these? Like, wait, hold on. So what was the first one again?
Man is killed by his wife after she hits him on the head with a frying pan while he complains about work. Come on.
Oh, man. I don't know. What are these, like, subplots from...
What? All right. I think everybody else knows. Sarah, you know this?
Is this 6 feet under deaths?
Close. A little more information.
CSI deaths?
A little bit more. It's the opening death scenes from 6 feet under. It's the
actual answer. Now that explains why. Never seen it.
All right. Oh. Let's get the end of regulation scores.
Okay. Sarah finished with...
Was here.
Sarah was present. Brittany had 5. I have 9.
We will start with...
Nope. Sarah, there we go. Oh, so many sounds all at once. Can't edit it too. I can't edit that, guys. It's just going to happen there. All right. Sarah, here's the consolation prize. Jerry Orbach.
Next.
Cesar Romero.
Next.
Donald O'Connor. And Robert Culp.
Dorothy love interests on Golden
all
Girls?
Dated a Golden Girls. I don't know if they're all Dorothy, but that's close enough. We're going to give you an extra point, which has no bearing on anything. Once again.
Yay!
Tara.
All right. We've got 8 minutes to get Brittany out here. I think we can do it. That is it for this episode of Extra Hot Great. Shouting through shared pod walls, we discuss the 5th season of Love is Blind before going around the dial with stops at American Horror Story, Still Up, and Still. Teresa got Normal People's 3rd episode into the canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's game from Mark. Next up, it is Special Forces, World's Toughest Test, plus important TV Rons, plus a whole bunch more on Extra Extra Hot Great. Don't miss that. Remember,
we're listening.
I've become manic in these last 2 minutes. I'm sorry, but it's just the way it is. I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Arrieta,
I'd like to think I'm super stable.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Congratulations on winning the season, Tara. Also, you're my number one.
Yeah.
And Brittany Luce.
I just feel like you're not being vulnerable with me.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
Oh, shit. Big brains over here. We'll leave it at that.
Okay, thanks.
Oh,